And I want to welcome everyone here today. We currently have three items on the agenda. I would make note that item number three, ACR 28 by Senator Gibson, is on the consent calendar. So we'll just be hearing, unless there's an extraction, items one and two. Again, reminder, our committee rules are such that we ask that each, when we have presentations, that the pro side, you have two witnesses, 3 minutes maximum apiece for 6 minutes, although if you have three witnesses, you can split it the other way. And then same with the opposition. And we ask that people try to adhere to those rules. And with that, we will first convene as a subcommittee until we have other members here for a quorum. And let's go ahead and begin with item number two, SB 486 by Senator Bates. And I do see Senator Bates here. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Chairman and Dr. Pan. It's great to be here this afternoon to present my bill on recovery residences, SB 486. It does prohibit commercially operated recovery residences from engaging in patient brokering and adds a $50,000 penalty for any violation. In 2018, the legislature approved Senate Bill 1228, Senator Lara, that prohibits the practice of patient brokering for licensed alcoholism or drug abuse recovery or treatment facilities, owners and operators of an RTF, and any person that works in a recovery treatment facility. However, this bill did not apply to recovery residences, and that's also, as we know, sober living homes. SB 486 will simply add commercially operated recovery residences to the list of entities that cannot give or receive anything of value for the referral of an individual seeking alcoholism or drug abuse recovery and treatment services. It adds a $50,000 penalty for violations. While the Americans with Disabilities Act protects individuals in recovery residences from regulation by the Department of Health Care Services, it could not have been the intent of the ADA to allow for patient brokering to occur in sober living homes. This is a predatory practice. It's led to many very, very unfortunate circumstances. People certainly continuing their addiction, being curbed, as we say, and that actually happened in my neighborhood. So the predatory practice really needs to stop, and we believe this is one area that has kind of fallen through the cracks. Last year, Senator Morlock and I sent a letter to federal officials asking for additional support in creating standards and requirements pertaining to sober living homes. While these discussions continue, California can take a stand today and prevent individuals with addiction from being treated as income-producing commodities. The bill will make it clear that the standards that were set in place by the legislature in 2018 will also apply to recovery residences that are commercially operated. Thank you for your attention today, and we do have some witnesses in support.
Okay, thank you. Witnesses in support, are they here?
Maybe they haven't arrived
yet. do you wish to testify and come before, or just a me too? Okay.
Connie Delgado on behalf of the County Behavioral Health Directors Association in support.
Thank you.
Hi, Sherry Daly with the California Consortium of Addiction Programs and Professionals. We're in a tweener position. We love the concept of the bill. We just feel that the $50,000 fine should have some latitude to it so that the department could assess a proportional sanction against this activity instead of an automatic $50,000 fine. And we also object to the use of the word commercial because it might create zoning problems for our recovery residences by creating a new definition that makes them seem more as a business and an operation than a home. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other witnesses in support? Seeing none, witnesses in opposition, if you wish to come up to the table. Okay. And while the witness is coming up to table, I would ask that other members of the Health Committee, we are one short of a quorum, so if you could make your way over here, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Yes, witness in opposition.
Dr. Pan, members Kirk Child, Disability Rights California. We would just like to say that we certainly oppose the idea of patient brokering and that odious practices as it's been used in practice in particularly in various areas of the state. So we appreciate the members' interest in attempting to deal with that. Unfortunately, we think on this bill, stepping into the recovery homes, really two things are that we think are significant problems with that, and particularly that they are covered by the FHA in particular, and so these become restrictions and regulations on these group homes. One piece that we find particularly troubling on this is it applies to commercial residents as well, and that's an unclear, undefined term, but we do know that the federal government has stated that the Fair Housing Act applies equally to commercial recovery homes as well as those that are not. So we would urge your no vote on the bill.
Okay, thank you. Before we take further opposition testimony, I do see we have a quorum. So, Secretary, can you please call the roll?
Pan?
Here.
Pan's here. Gonzalez?
Here.
Gonzalez here. Grove?
Here.
Grove here. Hurtado?
Here.
Hurtado here. Leyva?
Here.
Leyva here. Mitchell, Monning, Rubio.
Okay, we have established a quorum. Okay, further testimony in opposition.
Ben Flory on behalf of Western Center on Law and Poverty in opposition.
Okay, seeing no other testimony, questions from committee members?
Move the bill.
Oh, okay, it's been moved by Senator Grove. Okay, Senator Bates, I do have a couple questions that, or at least a question to ask you. So in the analysis and also the opposition has testified, there's a concern about the FHA rules essentially saying that, I mean, you talk about a commercial operated recovery residence, but essentially what the FHA says is that, I mean, these are not licensed facilities, these are residences, right? And so our current law currently allows, for example, if a licensed treatment facility is making payments, let's say, to a landlord or whoever is running such a facility and is making payments, that and we catch them doing that in order of exchange for patients, then the facility that facility can lose their license and basically be excluded from business, right? So in other words, there is a mechanism to address, to try to punish those who engage in this patient brokering. On the flip side, though, is that, and I know you're looking at the home side, but the problem is the way the FHA is structured, we can't, I mean, it's a living situation, and so we can't discriminate against that. So what's your, I mean, how do you see us resolving that issue in your current bill? Because I think, at least the way I've seen it, is that that does run in conflict with the FHA.
Thank you.
Thank you for that question, Senator Pan. I think what we have, and I think we've all been struggling with it, we know that there have been 20 years of laws proposed here to try to curb what seems to be, and I'm just going to say it the way I see it, absolute abuse of people who are recovering from one substance abuse to another. Something needs to be done with the ones that are considered group homes. They are the ones that manage to slide amongst all of the regulations, because a sober living home can have more than six people. I think that was the concern originally. People thought, oh, a sober living home, you can only have six. Well, no, because it's a group home. It's a group of people with a particular substance abuse. It could be alcohol, drugs, whatever, that come together to live together as a group. So what's missing, clearly, is to have a subset for those who are disabled, afflicted with substance abuse, compared to those who are developmentally disabled, who are disabled physically, like our elders, seniors, all of those other protected classes is quite different than what is happening in the substance abuse arena. And the sober living home bad actors, let's say, have discovered that they can weave their way through that, but still go out into the community and basically recruit those who are living on the street, obviously engaged, and then refer them from a sober living home directly to a treatment facility. So there's another chain. We stopped it at the RTF from recruiting into that. We did not stop it at the other end. So they're coming in the other way. They're coming into group homes, Alcohol Anonymous, whatever, going there to recruit people, and they're going into what is just a recovery residence, which has no mandatory restriction on number in the home. No treatment can be given, yet they're coming in that way, and they're not actually, I think, solving the problem that people have, the reason they gather together. So we have to find a way. And I do think that the amendments that have been offered, the discussion of commercially run, because I do think that would affect the zoning issue, that a local government could restrict it because now it's commercial and make it go to some other part of the city. And they want these homes to be in a neighborhood so people are surrounded with what is like a home, quote-unquote, to recover and become part of the community and certainly kick their habit, whatever it is. So I understand the problems, but I don't think we can continue to kick the can down the road when you now have an opportunity being presented that they come in the other way, because we shut off, you know, the road through the RTFs, but we still have this open door on a sober living home. We'll continue to work on it. Certainly, I would be very pleased to take amendments that have been suggested by those who are support with amendments. I think that's a start in the right direction, but I leave it to the committee to discuss and, you know, find a way or send me out to do some more work on it, because I've been doing this since I was elected in 2014, and I have a few more years to keep at it. So I will certainly be doing that.
Okay. Yes, Senator Leva.
Thank you, Senator Bates. I do agree with you. We don't want anyone pushing someone into a facility and then receiving money for that or anything of value. I do have a little issue with the $50,000 fine. I just feel like that is way, way, way too much. I mean, we just had a bill last year where if nurse staffing ratios aren't met, where people will actually die, then the first violation is $15,000, the next violation is $30,000. So I feel like $50,000 is terribly high. My other question is, I don't believe that sober living homes are regulated by DHCS. Okay, but DHCS is the one who would be fining them? That seems
they
a little...
Would the, they would be the enforcement as they are for the RTFs.
Okay.
They would have that responsibility when someone actually complains or sends a complaint about one that's operating that way.
Okay. I wonder if they are the best agency to be the enforcement agency, since they have absolutely no control over those homes. I don't know that I have a suggestion for a better one, but I really appreciate what you're doing, but I would like to see you keep working on it, because I can't support it like in its current form today. But again, I appreciate the spirit of the bill, and maybe we can keep working on it and figure out a way forward.
Okay. And again, Senator Bates, I appreciate your efforts on this. I know, you know, you presented earlier in the time since then to today. Unfortunately, I'm not sure there's sufficient progress. I guess, and I sort of posed this in the beginning, that the challenge is, I think, fundamentally is that we can't basically say, well, these are sober living homes and these are other houses, right? So whatever rule we apply has to apply across all living situations. That's what the FHA says. And I'm afraid that this bill, I mean, I think there's also some issues about like the amount, I think the fine's a bit excessive, et cetera. Current law does allow us to go, so for example, if there's a residential treatment facility, which is licensed by DHCS, and we find out that they are making or accepting payments from others for patient brokering, That's the entity that is actually licensed and can be punished and have their license removed. So in other words, because it takes two to tango, right? So you have to have someone who's sending the money, someone accepting the money. So fortunately, that is existing law. I think that if we're going to take any approach on the home side, we have to think about things that apply equally to all houses, or potentially, if there's an individual, but not as a home, right? Because as much as we might want to say sober living homes, and I know you tried to do commercial, but then it raises the distinction about, well, by definition, what's commercial, right? If you're renting it to people, does that automatically make it commercial? Just renting to someone who is recovering, does that automatically make you now, and how many of them have to, internet situation? So I do think the fundamental issue that is still unresolved in this bill is its conflict with sort of federal law and also civil rights about saying that, again, these are unlicensed facilities. So Department of Healthcare Services, it's not like they can take away their license. They don't even know who they are because they don't have to, they're not registered. And I know people have talked about, but again, these are homes. These are not treatments. As soon as they tip over into being a treatment facility, then there are consequences for that, right? And we can actually go after. So if someone is engaging in treatment, we can then go over for them for being unlicensed and punish them for that. If they make payments to a licensed facility, then we can go after the licensed facility itself to say, why are you accepting payments? You should not, that's patient brokering. You should not be accepting or giving payments to people, to anybody for patients, right? So we do have those things in place. Maybe there's things we can tweak about that or things we can do to help support, to provide more resources for enforcement that will hopefully get to that. So we do have tools to do that. Maybe we can figure out ways to enhance those, but I am afraid that the way the bill is currently, it's still, unfortunately, runs afoul of sort of the civil rights law and housing laws. And so, unfortunately, I'm not able to support it today because of that. But I do hope that, and I know you've been working on this issue for a while, that we can continue to have a dialogue and figure out what are some of the other mechanisms we can put in place, or how do we make our current mechanisms either more effective or things we can adjust that to try to adjust the very real problem that you see in your community and I think other communities do see. All right. So, yes, Senator Grove.
I just want to applaud you for bringing this piece of legislation forward, and I know that it was creative for you to go around this mechanism, because I know that in the past, previous years, legislation has been brought forward to put the licensor, new licensing effect on these homes, as the chair just mentioned, and it was defeated and stopped. And so I applaud you for still trying to address this issue and making sure that people aren't taken advantage of, as bartered or traded or sold, like some of the stuff that's going on in these particular facilities. So I thank you for doing that and looking for a new innovative outside-the-box thinking in order to try to solve this problem. Maybe it's time we charge up that hill again to get licensure, but again, it was killed last time because of budget. And the state said they needed, 200 new positions in order to execute that. But I applaud you for thinking outside the box.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Senator Gonzalez.
Yes, I just, too, want to say thank you as well. I know this is, being from local government, one big issue, certainly. But I, too, think that this needs a lot more work. Also would be interested in figuring out how, if there is a threshold, how do we get those living facilities to become certified if they are at that brink? So I don't know, and maybe this is a question for the committee staff, on if there's been any data brought back from SB 1228 from the RTFs to see if there's, I don't know, any sort of data that could be brought back. And similar to the discussion we had on the gravely disabled issue, I know that that's going through an audit currently, but perhaps that could be another avenue as well to figure out. And although maybe there's some sort of state connection that they have of some sort, or there's, something that we can do to provide more data to help in getting these folks licensed and up to par. So just some ideas out there, but thank you again.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. So I too want to thank you. I would just point out that one of the big challenges is that, we often talk about sober living homes as there's no treatment. It's simply a place where they live. And I think we just got that And so that's why we haven't, that's why we've defeated, you know, legislation hasn't been able to put in place to license them. They're not, as soon as they start doing anything beyond people are living there, then that tips into a whole different category, and they are, have to be licensed and so forth, but it's just, but it's a group of people living together, and we can't discriminate against one group of people living together and another group of people living, choosing to live together. And I think that's one of the things we're still wrestling with. But with that, I also do want to thank you for your work on that. Would you like to close?
Just thank you for the discussion. I do believe that there's a path that's there. It just hasn't revealed itself. I know Florida, the state of Florida, has done a lot of work, and they now do have some oversight on what's defined as a recovery residence, unlicensed. So we'll keep working on it, and I think certainly in the next year, hopefully we'll find that answer, and I will certainly be author or co-author when it emerges, when it reveals itself. So thank you very much for the discussion. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so very much, Senator Bates.
I just asked for an aye vote. I should do that right.
Thank you. All right. Senator Bates requests an aye vote, and it's been SB 486. The motions do pass and refer to the Committee on Appropriations. It's been moved by Senator Grove. Secretary, please call the roll.
Pan?
No.
Pan? No. Gonzalez? Gonzalez? No. Grove?
Aye.
Grove? Aye. Hurtado? Hurtado? No. Leyva?
No.
Leyva? No. Mitchell? Monning, Rubio.
Okay. The current vote is 1-4. We'll hold the roll open for absent members and look forward to continuing to work with you on this issue. Thank you, Senator Bates. Senator Grove, would you like to chair?
So we'll give the chair just a second to get ready, but next up is SB 175 by Dr. Pan. At your pleasure.
Okay. Thank you so much, Senator Grove, members. SB 175 is a rewrite of SB 51 of 2011. The 2011 legislation put into California law the requirement that the Affordable Care of the Affordable Care Act that health plans insurers cannot have lifetime or annual limits on their health care benefits. This is very important because sometimes if you had a severe condition like cancer or some other, you could actually run out of your benefits and then not have any further coverage. SB 175 rewrites the law to remove the federal citations and instead puts the actual federal law provisions into California law. With efforts to undo some or all of the ACA, it is prudent at this time to ensure that Californians will continue to have the same protections that they've now enjoy and that they have continued to have access to these very important protections. I respectfully ask for an aye vote so we can ensure that we protect the people of California, and I do have a witness in support.
Thank you, Dr. Pan. Witnesses in support?
My name is Diana Douglas. On behalf of Health Access California, the statewide healthcare consumer advocacy coalition, we are pleased to be here today to support SB 175, which would codify into California law provisions of the Affordable Care Act that prohibit individual and group insurance plans from establishing annual or lifetime limits on the dollar value benefits for each enrollee. Prior to the Affordable Care Act, consumers were faced with devastating medical bills if their care exceeded the benefit limits set by their insurance. For example, if you were a new parent and had a baby who might require costly weeks or months in the neonatal intensive care unit, or if you were experiencing a severe illness and required a transplant, if you found yourself in those situations, you might also find that your coverage ran out just when you needed it most, despite being insured. We cannot afford to lose those protections gained under the Affordable Care Act and return to a time when people facing serious illnesses could be left on the hook for thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. To protect against future attacks on the Affordable Care Act by the federal administration or courts, we've codified most provisions into state law. However, this is one remaining that we still need to take action on. SB 175 will ensure that Californians can continue to afford the care they need when they need it most. We support 175 and ask for your aye vote. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Others in support?
And Flory on behalf of Western Center on Law and Poverty in support.
Madam Chair, Betsy Armstrong on behalf of the County Health Executives Association representing local health departments and with apologies for our late letter in support.
Thank you.
Vanessa Hina with KP Public Affairs on behalf of the California Academy of Family Physicians here in support.
Thank you.
Lydia Bourne, representing American Academy of Pediatrics, California Division, in support.
Thank you.
Rebecca Gonzalez, National Association of Social Workers, California Chapter, in support.
Thank you. Individuals in opposition? No one in opposition? Any questions from the dais? Senator Leyva moves the bill. No questions from the dais. Sir, would you like to close?
I respectfully ask for an aye vote. Thank you.
Clerk Caller, oh, the motion. I apologize. So this is due pass to refer to the Committee on Appropriations.
Pan?
Aye.
Pan, aye. Gonzalez?
Aye.
Gonzalez, aye. Grove?
Aye.
Grove, aye. Hurtado?
Aye.
Hurtado, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell?
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Monning? Rubio?
So you have 6 votes and your bill is out, but you have other members that would like to come back and vote on it, I'm sure.
All right, thank you. Okay, our last item is actually our consent calendar. We only have one item. That's ACR 28 by Senator Gibson on Sickle Cell Disease Awareness Month. Is there a motion for the consent calendar? Okay, it's been moved by Senator Mitchell. Secretary, please, the motion is be adopted and referred to the Committee on Appropriations with recommendation, to consent calendar. That's an interesting motion. Okay. I think the appropriations will decide whether they want to put something on the consent calendar. Their consent calendar. All right. Secretary, please call the roll.
Pan?
Aye.
Pan, aye. Gonzalez?
Aye.
Gonzalez, aye. Grove?
Aye.
Grove, aye. Hurtado?
Aye.
Hurtado, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell?
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Monning, Rubio?
Okay. The consent calendar has 6 votes. We'll keep the roll open for absent members. Okay. Thank you. And actually, did Mitchell vote on the previous one?
She did not vote on
the previous one. Oh, but she was here, but she stayed off. Okay, all right. All right. Oh, of course. Okay, so we are going to lift the call. We'll start with item number one, SB 175 by Senator Pan, myself. Secretary, please call the roll of absent members.
Monning. Aye. Monning, aye. Rubio.
Okay. All right, so that bill is out, 7-0. Next item is item number two, SB 486 by Senator Bates. Secretary, please call the roll of absent members.
Mitchell?
No. The chair voted no. Secretary, please call the roll of absent members.
Mitchell? Monning? Rubio?
Okay, so that bill failed 1-4, and barring any objections, we will grant reconsideration. No, on this one? Okay. All right, so okay, no desire for reconsideration on this one. So we'll just leave it. So the bill fails 1-4. Okay, thank you. And then finally, we have the consent calendar, which only has item number three, ACR 28, by Senator Gibson. Secretary, please call the roll of absent members.
Monning? Aye. Monning, aye. Rubio?
Okay, the consent calendar is out 7-0. Thank you. Yes, sure. Okay, with that, we have concluded the agenda of this hearing of the Senate Committee on Health. We are now adjourned. Thank you.